Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, this is Carol Topp, host of the Dollars and Cents Show. Welcome to episode number 53. This is the second part of a podcast on homeschool co-ops, how to start them, run them, and not burn out, that I delivered at a homeschool convention recently. And in this second half, I take a lot of questions from the audience, and in particular, they had a lot of questions about tax-exempt status, and needing insurance, and does a tiny group of just a small group of three families need 501c3 tax-exempt status. So I think you might find this pretty helpful. I also share some general information about, you know, avoiding burnout when you start a homeschool co-op and being careful about not taking on too much responsibility. I hope you enjoy it. Always there is more information about running a homeschool co-op over at my website, homeschoolcpa.com. I hope you enjoy this. Hope you enjoy the podcast. And hey, remember, I don't do this alone. I am part of a podcast network. The Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network is a bunch of homeschoolers broadcasting about homeschooling in lots of different aspects. So make sure you check out Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network and see what other podcasts out there you might find interesting and helpful as you homeschool.
Avoiding burnout, basically the sense of community, which I think I've emphasized already. Do not repeat Moses' mistake. This is not all on you. Ultimately, have guidelines, have policies, and those are there to help you avoid making decisions in a crisis. And a crisis will happen. problems will come up, and you can refer back to your policy. So I taught a high school class, and it was on career exploration, and some kids in the back of the room were texting and passing a cell phone back and forth and showing each other, and it was distracting me, and it was distracting the students around him, and we had a policy that said no cell phone use in class. So I told them, give me the cell phone. And they did, because they were good homeschool kids, but they dragged mom in to talk to me after class. And I said, the policy says no cell phone use in class. I'm keeping this till the end of the day. Well, I didn't know about that policy. Well, you signed a document that said you read it. Well, my daughter didn't sign it. Well, our policy says that you communicated these things to your high school daughter. We also had policies about dress code, you know, about girls could not wear, and we're in Cincinnati, it gets warm, could not wear shorts shorter than the fingertip. And there were times when we had to enforce the dress code because the girls were testing us and wore very short shorts. And you said, change, or here's a very ugly shirt for you to wrap around your waist to cover what's not being covered by your clothing. So anyway, you put policies in place, and there are tons. Just Google homeschool policies, borrow other groups. To avoid you looking like the bad guy, it's the policy. You signed it. We're a co-op. We get along, hopefully. Have you heard me say this? Focus, focus, focus. Your purpose. Because you can't be all things to all people. And don't try, or you'll burn out. Okay. We can talk about lots of things. There's a lot more to learn about and read about. It's good. We're about halfway through. Tax-exempt status, which I touched on briefly. I have more slides if you want to talk about that. Conflict resolution. I have an article about how to resolve conflicts in a homeschool group over at my website, Homeschool CPA. We can talk about insurance. We can talk about bringing in these paid teachers. How do you pay them? They're independent contractors or are they employees? The answer is usually independent contractors, but make sure you give them the independence that they're supposed to have. And we can talk about fundraising, do's and don'ts. There's also an article on my website about that. I can answer any questions you have at this point, or I have more things to talk about. So, questions, comments, anything you want to talk about from the list. Miss me.
An audience member asks a question about a new co-op she's starting. It only has three families, and she's wondering if she needs 501c3 tax-exempt status.
No, not for that smaller group, no. And the reason is the tax-exempt status is if you are serving a public good. So the IRS would say you three people are not a public good. You're not big enough, although there's no, like, litmus test for it. So I helped one group that was 40 families, or maybe only 20 families. They were the smallest group I've ever helped get 501c3 status. And I was a little worried the IRS would say that's not serving a public good. And they were all from the same church, too. They weren't kind of open to the public, if you will. I guess in a sense a church is open to the public, they were, but their co-op came from the church members. And, you know, it passed the IRS. So I would say, but with three of you, you're just pooling your money, if you even have any money involved. You know, I knew one co-op, they're 10 families, and they've been running for 2 years now with no checking account because everybody just pitches in. And so they don't need a checking account, which is nice. If you can operate without a checking account in the group's name, it's a wonderful place to operate. Okay. So now she's one of these leaders that called me and said we were eight to 10 families. Now we've doubled. We'll be 21. We have to move to a church, not a house. And these are the steps. And now she's calling me and we're saying, okay, now you got to go through this and this and this. The EIN from the bank, they're from the IRS, get a bank account. And she said, we've got 21 families and a waiting list. So she's one of these that's doubled, nearly tripled. But she's got 2 years of experience, and now she's decided she's going to grow. You may never decide to grow. You may stay your three families, maybe at a fourth or fifth, but you could stay small. But some of the same principles, like we are this, we do this. Let's decide on, you know, what curriculum, where, when. Those questions you still got to answer. Yeah, very good. Very good. Problem is when people find out about your group, it won't stay small. That's all homeschooling is. Yes?
You mentioned the three, would the owner or would they need to take care of?
I think a general homeowner's policy would cover any gathering in your group.
Even
you know, it's. Yeah, I have my Bible study, you know, my small group Bible study of five couples that meet and they come to my home. I'm allowed to do that. My insurance covers that. That's why I have insurance. Slips and falls, not just property, it covers slips and falls and accidents that happen to people while in my home. Yeah. And if you get really nervous, you can have an umbrella policy, which covers any kind of lawsuit somebody brings against you. But, you know, lawsuits, fortunately, in the homeschool community are relatively rare. I've talked to HSLDA lawyers about it. There was only one so far. It was brought against a group of Indiana who was holding a banquet and serving chicken, and one of the mothers requested steak for her daughter who has an allergy to chicken. And they said, we won't give you steak, but bring in your own food. The mother sued on the American with Disabilities Act. And it passed the first level of the American with Disabilities Act, said, yes, this is a disability. You discriminated against her. Went to the next level, and the judge said, no, there was no discrimination on disabilities, legitimate. So, but HSLDA followed that. They were not the attorneys. There were other attorneys that helped the group pro bono. The group dissolved, by the way. But that's about the only lawsuit that we have heard of brought against a homeschool group. So I think there's a lot of there should be legitimate concern. Like our group had insurance because. And we got kicked out of one church. I joke that there was some incident with the boys' bathroom. I don't know what it was. I don't want to know. But they said, please don't come back. Okay. So, you know, and there was the damage, the toner and things like that. So you might need insurance, but I don't like homeowners insurance to take care of small groups of families meeting in homes. Questions, concerns? Yes. Yes. She said one thing that's come up at their leaders' meeting is the need to do background checks on people, especially maybe those working in the nursery. And I was just in Pennsylvania, and I think Pennsylvania law just changed because some of the leaders there were talking about it and how they're now going to be required to do background checks on anybody over age 18 anybody who works with people under age 18 is what I'm trying to say. Okay. So my advice is, first of all, if you're meeting in a church, You need to go talk to the church and say, what are your requirements for background checks? You know, and then you put in, first of all, your best defense is good policies and practice those policies. So two adults in the room at all times. If it's a married couple, there needs to be a third person in the room, okay? You know, I'm sorry, guys, but there seems to be more concern about men than women in terms of potential abuse. So guys need to be instructed about, you never touch a girl. You never touch her. You don't even give her a sidearm hug. But a woman might be able to give a sidearm hug, but never front to front. These kinds of rules, large churches will have good policies that you can follow about those kinds of things. So that's the first thing. Have good policies, put them in place. Background checks may or may not be needed. The church may have a program with a background check that you could be a part of then. I taught at it wasn't a co-op, it was a homeschool program, and I had to get my own background check, give them the papers, cost me $35 or something like that. I'm going to repeat that for the recording. In the state of Michigan, nonprofit organizations are given free background checks, but that's probably at the state level, because I found out when I got my background check that there are different levels of checks. So they probably run a background check on Michigan incidences for free, but then there's this federal background check.
There were federal, so I know,
federal too. Oh, cool.
We had some good state. People would move to Michigan.
Uh-huh.
We get the information from
other states. Okay, that's good. That's good. That's very nice. And by nonprofit, did they require any paperwork to prove you were a nonprofit, or did you just say, what did they require? Do you remember? I'm curious.
Well, I don't think our group is a part again.
Interesting.
Nonprofit.
Okay.
Nonprofit.
You might be a nonprofit corporation, or you might have filed. Okay. That's the IRS threshold of when you need to apply. So if your gross income is less than $5,000 a year, you are automatically tax exempt with the IRS. You just don't have a letter to prove it. Therefore, it's difficult sometimes to go to the states. Some states will automatically exempt you. Some will say, I only recognize what the IRS does.
Yeah,
but sounds like as a nonprofit. So that's good. That's good news to hear that. That's good news. So they're giving basically a break to nonprofits on the background checks. That's very good news.
Homeschool leader, do you feel confused or overwhelmed by the job of running your homeschool group? You're not alone. Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA, is here to help. Carol is an accountant, author, and retired homeschool mom who understands you. Her website has helpful information on co-ops, paying workers, and managing the money in a homeschool group. If you need personalized advice, set up a consultation with Carol. She's happy to discuss your particular situation. Visit homeschoolcpa.com today and get the information you need to successfully run your homeschool group.
I have lots of resources. I mentioned my website a couple times. I also have a podcast called Dollars and Cents Show. And on there, like my most recent podcast, it just aired last Thursday. I do it like every other week. It's called Who's Afraid of the Big Bad IRS? And I talk about the tax-exempt status for groups. I have another one called something about, do you know about the required IRS filings? Okay. I'll be doing more podcasts. Typically, I take conferences like this and put them into podcasts. So go out there and look and listen and see what might be helpful to you. You could also sign up for my email list, which sends you like blog posts. Most of my blog posts are questions from leaders and then my answer. And you'll just get an email about once, maybe at most twice a month, that says, here's the latest blog posts. I do have these books. The one in the middle, Homeschool Co-ops, How to Start Them, Run Them, and Not Burn Out, is the book I wrote because I didn't see anybody else writing about homeschool co-ops. I wrote it in 2008. That's like a long time ago now. And I updated it a year or two ago. So I took a lot of information, interviewed a lot of co-op leaders. There's chapters in there about conflict. There's chapters in there about volunteers and a little bit on the money stuff. I had to write another book to cover the money management. That's the green book, Money Management and Homeschool Organization, a guide for treasurers. And then I'm a little worried about your group, unless they're very, very tiny, that they haven't applied for tax-exempt status yet. $5,000 is not a lot of money. It's pretty easy to get over $5,000 of gross income, meaning you're supposed to apply. Or if you haven't, that means you're supposed to be paying taxes. So that's why I'm worried about your group. So you need to find out if they are really that small or 5,000?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Phew. Okay, good. Now, the next thing, do you know, though, about the annual reports you're supposed to be filing? This one? Every group, even the tiny ones, even your homeschool support groups that never had to apply because they were automatically tax exempt, are supposed to be filing this 990N every year at the IRS. If you don't do it for 3 years, they automatically yank your tax exempt status, and you have to then apply for something and pay their $400 fee to regain the status that you had already that you didn't even have to apply for. Get that? Crazy?
Yes.
Frustrating? Yes. It's very easy to fill out. Thank you. But a lot of groups don't know about it. Take you 5 minutes. Take you 5 minutes to fill out this form. It's very simple. Let me back up a little bit here. Let me just talk. Well, first of all, I do consultations. That's what that picture. I can't tell what slide I'm on. Okay. Nonprofits. We're kind of going back to the very first question about, you know, business, LLC, or nonprofit. You're a nonprofit if you're, the IRS says, if you're organized like one, meaning a board, not a no-profit motive, and if you operate like, board and bylaws, and if you operate like one, meaning no-profit motive. Your motive is education of children. So I get a lot of homeschool leaders, they'll call me and say, well, we're not a nonprofit, meaning they haven't, like, done some paperwork to be registered like your group did. And I'll say, well, you're not a nonprofit. Are you a for-profit? No, we're not that either. So what they're trying to tell me, I think, is that we haven't gone and filed any official paperwork yet. And I say, you are a nonprofit if you're organized and operate like one. Call yourself what you are. What you probably are not is tax exempt. Okay? That's the IRS word, tax exempt. And I equate it to marriage. Okay? So, like, nonprofit status is like a married couple. You're a nonprofit. You act like it, right? You act like you're married. You are married. You act like it. They don't get the tax benefits until they go file a form. And in the married couple case, a tax form is married filing joint, right? That's when you get tax benefits. Or in our case, you don't get the tax benefits of tax exemption until you go apply with the IRS. Kind of makes sense, right? Okay, so there's the difference between nonprofit status is granted by your state, tax exemption is granted by the IRS after you apply, with three exceptions. Here are the three exceptions of when you don't have to apply. You are automatically tax exempt, and that is under the 5,000, tiny, like your group. That threshold has not changed in a very long time. They haven't adjusted it. I would like to see it be 25,000 at least, maybe 50, although I don't think they'll go there. Or you are a 501c7 social club, other kinds of 501c's. There's about 23 501c's, C3s, the educational. That's what we are as homeschool co-ops, educational purpose. Okay, C7s are social clubs. That's normally our support groups, C7s. Social clubs, hobby clubs, just groups to get together for recreation. Okay, they are automatically tax exempt. They don't have to apply. Okay, and the other one is if you're a ministry of the church and you don't have your own employer identification number, you're under the churches. That's a lovely place to be because churches don't even have to apply for tax exempt status. Okay, they get the employer identification number for the purposes of a bank account, but they don't have to apply, nor do they have to do this annual reporting. The rest of us have to do an annual reporting. Basically, here's what I tell groups. You have four choices. Stay under 5K a year. That's what you just told me you guys do. Phew, good. Okay. Find a church. That's getting harder and harder and harder to do. Churches seem to be more reluctant to let homeschool groups come underneath their ministries. It's just unfortunate. But go ahead and file to become tax exempt, 501c3 status. It's easier than it used to be. The IRS made it easier last year with a new form. Or you can pay your taxes. And nobody picks option four if they're nonprofits. Like I said, there are some businesses being formed to run homeschool programs. and they're paying taxes on their profits. And then here's what I talked about earlier, but everybody who's a nonprofit, even not churches, churches are exempt, but even those who are tiny or the support groups are supposed to be filing this form, 990, 980EZ or 990N. If you're less than $50,000 of gross annual revenues a year, you can get by with filing this very short form. It's 8 questions. They don't ask financial statements. They just check a box. Yes, less than $50K, name, address, EIN number, name of one officer. Are you still alive? Check the box. That's it. 5 minutes. So one poor homeschool leader, large group in Nebraska. Her treasurer failed to file this. 5 minutes, take 5 minutes and file this. And he got a letter from the IRS saying, you forgot. He ignored it. 2 years, he ignored it. 3 years, he finally showed it to the board. And by the time he showed it to them, it was too late. By the time he filed it, it was too late. 3 strikes, you're out. They lost their tax exempt status. So they came to me. I helped them get it reinstated. $850 fee to the IRS. $600 fee to me, back taxes, total $2,100 to get back the status that they had to begin with because the treasurer failed to do his job for 5 minutes. She was angry is not the word. All right. So anyway, I want you to just be aware of that kind of stuff. As you grow and you become aware of some of these obligations, Ask your board, are you doing this? Ask other boards, do you know about this? Ultimately, I'm here to not scare you, but help you and help you realize I've got some resources to help you. I do a lot of phone consultations, too, because sometimes there's just particular things. And even if I meet you here and we talk, I might have to. I like to see paperwork. That's why I was asking that question about what is it you have? What paperwork? Yeah, I'm a CPA. CPAs study business law. We like to see the legal documents to make sure everything's in top shape. So we keep track of, so we do things right. I've got some feedback slips for you to fill out. I've got some door prizes for you. If you want to give me your email, it will put you on my email address too. But let's see what other questions or concerns you have about co-ops now. You said you have 50 families.
30 families,
but you're small income-wise,
right,
less than 5K.
5,000.
Cool. So you have 4 people in leadership right now?
A treasurer.
That's good.
Field trip coordinator, and then me as the coordinator.
You're the coordinator, which other folks might call the chair or the president, kind of the person who's the head of the pyramid, if in charge. And then you split it into other duties. Treasurer separated from you. Very good. Very, very, very good. I don't like the head honcho and the treasurer in the same person. The one of the basic things to stop fraud and embezzlement, and it happens even in small homeschool groups, is you have to separate the authority to spend money with the check writing. So if someone submits a receipt, hopefully you're authorizing it, and then the treasurer writes the check, makes the check out, maybe it even goes back to you for signature on the check. Very good. It just did my CPA heart so glad. So what's your question? Sounds like you do have a board of directors.
I just wondered.
The audience member asks if her group needs more formal documents like bylaws or a handbook or even nonprofit incorporation.
It's one of those things. It's like the Constitution. When do we pull the Constitution out? The Constitution of the United States. When do you pull it out? Well, when the Supreme Court needs to decide something. So sometimes those bylaws are dormant. They're not needed, even like your handbook. They're not needed until a problem arises.
Right.
And then you pull it out and say, oh, it says this is what's required to be a member. Oh, it says we're supposed to be serving limited terms of 3 years and then new board members.
Right.
And why did we put that in? Oh, yeah, that brings new people in. So it's the kind of document that you write up, hopefully, in the with cool heads. To handle situations when there's hotheads.
Okay.
Like the Constitution, right?
Right.
Yep. So,
how often do you think you revisit revamping bylaws?
Not very often. 3-5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I just, this group, you'd laugh. So this group, I'm not a lawyer, but I will read over their bylaws just to make sure it's in compliance with what the IRS expects and give advice, but I can't prepare a bylaw. I have sample bylaws, but I have to be careful about not doing lawyer stuff. And but this group had in there about announcement about special meetings. Announcements by special meetings will be done by mail, fine, telegram, or facsimile. And I'm like, telegram, what are you copying? They had found some very old bylaws somewhere and were just copying them. Because I said, replace the word telegram with email. You know, notification will be by email, by mail, but it just cracked me up. So those bylaws definitely need to be updated, right? Telegram. Crack me up. Let me say in general, homeschool, leading a homeschool co-op is a wonderful thing. Okay, I was doing a workshop. I do one sometimes called, it's kind of how to prevent leader burnout, kind of like a support group for support group leaders. And there were only like 12 people that came, maybe even fewer. But I got done, one of the leaders came to me and she said, you just influenced 3,000 people. I was like, how did I do that? And she said, well, you had us go all talk about our groups, and this person had 30 families, and this person had so many families. And then she was a math person. She said, on average, I figured there were, you know, how many, 3 kids per homeschool family, maybe 4, you know, depends on the 5. And she figured out that there were probably 3,000 people represented by those 12 leaders. And so my point is, you guys are having a wonderful, tremendous impact on the future of, I'm not putting pressure on you, I'm saying it's absolutely marvelous that you are having a tremendous impact on many lives, which is just beautiful. You guys are the ones, you know, you remember when we used to be criticized about socialization, you know? You guys as the co-op leaders are the ones who met that criticism and said, hello, we socialize, you know? When homeschoolers were fearful of not getting into college, homeschool co-ops offered academically challenging classes to high school kids. It's how my daughters got biology dissection. A nurse at my co-op taught it because I did not want frogs on my kitchen table. So you guys are making it possible for parents to successfully homeschool through high school by the things that you're offering and the things you're supporting. So, you know, kudos to you all. So thanks very much, everybody. Any more questions before we close? I don't want to stop anybody if you have questions, comments, observations. If not, God bless. You're doing great work. Stay encouraged. Don't burn out. All right. Take care. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.